So we're going to try to finish off last week's piece and then continue, start a new piece for this week. I'm on page 6 right now on the copies. And then I have more copies here once we finish page 6 and 7. We're in the middle of discussing the concept of schar mitzvah in this world. And we had the contradiction in the Gemara. The Gemara says, schar mitzvah hayamaleka, there's no such thing as schar mitzvah in this world. Hashem rewards in the next world only, and not in our world. But yet we find in the Torah so many places where it says Hashem will give us reward for mitzvahs in this world. And like in Shema, that I'll give you rain, and I'll give you food, and you'll eat, and you'll be satisfied, etc. So we have to resolve that contradiction. What does it mean that Hashem doesn't give reward in this world, if He does give reward in this world? Which one is it? So Rav Dessler explained to us last week, based on the Rambam, that true reward is in the next world, but in this world, you get the tools to continue on serving Hashem. So Hashem doesn't get the actual reward for us, what we're being paid off for mitzvos is in Olam Haba only, but Hashem will give us in this world the means to continue serving Him if we're doing the right things. Schar mitzvah mitzvah, the ultimate reward for mitzvah is another mitzvah. So Hashem gives you ability and opportunities for more mitzvos if you do mitzvos in this world. That's how we explained it in a general sense. So right now we're up to the second to last paragraph on page 6. Amnam Yadati is how it begins. So you may ask the following question. So he's really going back to a previous thing we said. Somebody is trying to choose Derech HaTorah and serve Hashem properly. So it sounds like the person is going to be deprived in this world to some degree. They're not going to be able to be involved in all the pleasures and joys of our world because they have to be able to focus themselves on serving Hashem. And Rav Dessler explained that which Hashem does give us has to be for the purpose of serving Him. Meaning we said the whole idea of Hashem granting us any prosperity is so we can serve Him better. So everything that we have has to be dedicated to the service of Hashem. And if not, then we're misallocating hektish in a certain sense. We're taking what's hektish, given to us for a purpose, and using it for the wrong purpose. So then it sounds like, you know, you live a life that's very focused in service of Hashem, very serious, very measured, and you're not able to actually enjoy. So that could be the issue that someone has when your life is so focused totally on the spiritual. So Rav Dessler says, Alzeh Nashiv Lo, answer the question the following way. Hincha Toa, it's a big mistake. Shol Yakar, my dear asker. Gadol Hu Onagenu Mi'oneg Hamadumeh Shelhem. The pleasure of a Jew is so much greater than the perceived pleasure of anybody else. We're called Amadushne Oneg. We're totally overwhelmed by the pleasure that we have. People think that they're enjoying themselves, but in the end, it's not really true. As we spoke about, I think, 2 weeks ago, where true happiness is found is not in those things people think make them happy. True happiness is found in spiritual fulfillment. True happiness is found in being satisfied that you have, not with what the world calls happiness. Chayim inum chayim. Their life is not really life. In them svia batanugehem, because they're never satisfied with their pleasures. And as we elaborated on before as well, the key word there is svia. When you feel satisfied, that makes you happy. When you feel needy, that means you're lacking. The wealthiest person in the world, if he thinks he's lacking, is poor. And somebody who's impoverished but feels content is wealthy. Because it's not about the bank account, it's about your attitude. That's what it's all about. Vachatseu roim. We see people who see a little bit of their desires, but they spend their life pursuing them and never will attain them. So therefore, they're not happy. We as Jews, we're called Am Medushne Oneg. We're totally overwhelmed and satisfied with pleasure. Oneg Osher Hamiti, because our lives are a true happiness. Ba'olam Hazeh, in this world, and then certainly in Olam Haba. Because when you're able to look at what you have and appreciate it and understand that it's the spiritual achievements that you make and those things in life which are eternal, what bring you happiness, and not the things that are fleeting and the things that you have to chase after and never actually get, that makes you happy. We're always satisfied with all of the great gifts Hashem gives us. And again, the key word is satisfied. It's appreciating what we have. If we feel satisfied, then we're happy and we're wealthy. Like Chazal say, "B'chol mida umida shumode lacha." Anything that Hashem measures out to you, have you modelo? You should thank Him for it. Meaning, when you thank Hashem for everything in life, that means you're satisfied with what you have. You don't take anything for granted. Everything is meaningful, everything is special, and everything makes you feel that Hashem is giving you more than you ever deserved. That's to be our attitude. I don't deserve anything. Whatever I have is a gift from Hashem, and I'm satisfied with it. We have to be able to give hodah, give thanks on the great goodness Hashem does for us in unwavering and unstopping ways. Hashem never stops giving us that kindness. And as I pointed out, it's so important. That's the purpose of brachos. We make brachos, you're supposed to make 100 brachos a day officially. That's the number the Gemara gives, 100 brachos a day, which usually is built into your life if you're saying brachos. And it's the ability to appreciate the world around you. And we make a bracha, what you're saying is, Hashem, I don't take for granted the fact that I have this apple, that I have this cup of water, that my body functions properly when I use the bathroom, that I'm able to see, that I'm able to stand up, that I have clothing to wear. I don't take it for granted. Most of the world, I think, takes those things for granted until you don't have it, chas v'shalom. But as long as you have it, people don't notice it. If you notice it, you can appreciate it, then because you simcha. If you don't notice it or take it for granted, then it doesn't bring you anything because you take it for granted. So the world of brachos and tefillah are really an amazing tool to achieve happiness. It's an amazing thing. Rabbi Victor Miller was one of the people who was a sort of expert in teaching appreciation. So Rav Miller, I mean, he brings it out in several ways. He would often take in his hands, let's say, like an orange. And he would say, let's examine the orange for a second. Appreciate what Hashem gave us. There is the color. It's a beautiful color. It pleases the eye. We know the color of fruits that are not yet ripe or rotting is a different color. So the fact that this orange looks bright orange means it's ready to eat. If it was rotting, it would be turning brown. And before it's ripe, usually, I don't know, oranges would be. But a lot of things are green or whatever. They're brownish before they're ripe. The peel is a protective layer, protecting the fruit on the inside. So nothing gets in, it doesn't get contaminated, it maintains its freshness. You peel off the peel, and it comes off fairly easily usually. And inside you have this delicious fruit. It's sweet, it's juicy, it's pleasing, it's refreshing. I mean, this is just the external glance at an orange, forgetting all the science that goes into it, forgetting the nutrition inside of it. I mean, you could take anything in the world and appreciate what Hashem gave us. And when you can appreciate an orange in that way, it makes you feel satisfied, feel happy. I have so much over here. I'm content. It's a way of viewing the world and understanding that there's so much that is done for me that I have to appreciate. And when you do that, you feel happy.
I was going to say it's a matter of taking time before you eat something, you know?
Right.
You're always in a rush eating, you know? But like what you're saying now, it's so beautiful, but it's like a matter of just stopping.
Right, stopping for maybe even 10 seconds just to take a look at what you're eating. That was a goblet, right? Mm-hmm. And when you make a bracha with kavana, which takes also another 5 seconds, and it doesn't take much time, but it leads to happiness. It's not just a religious activity, but it makes a person happy because you're appreciating life. And that's what leads to real happiness. He's going to mention the next line. He says, "Vezer bir b'ma shenemar b'kriyas shema v'achalta v'savata." We say in Shema, "You shall eat, and you shall be satisfied." So the key word, as we said, is the svia. Eating and not being satisfied is a curse. In the Tochacha, one of the curses we get is you're going to eat, and it's not going to be l'sova. You're not going to feel satisfied from it. So you can eat and eat and eat, but you don't feel full. One of the brachos that the Torah gives us is that you can eat even a small amount and you feel satisfied from it, because it's the satisfaction that you're looking for. You want to feel content. If you're still looking, if you're still yearning, if you're still trying to get more, you're not going to be happy, you're not going to feel good. Inyan svia zu hi ha'ma'ula shebrachos. So Rav Dessler says, the idea of svia, of being satisfied, that's the greatest of brachos, is to feel, I have what I need. Kein lecha adam sheyisba b'inyanei holm hazeh. Because in terms of this world, the material world, nobody is satisfied. When you're pursuing pleasures of our world, you're never going to get what you want. You're always hungry. And only the person whose goals are spiritual. And this world is merely a means to an end. Someone whose desire is to serve Hashem. That person is now being trained to feel satisfied in Hashem's gifts in this world as well, and is always happy. To a quote from the famous comparison the Chazal make with Yaakov and Esav, which you may have heard before. Now Yaakov says, Yeshli Kol. Esav says, Yeshli Rav. Right? So Esav says, I have a lot. Yaakov says, I have everything. So those two terms, even though they seem similar, are very different. Saying I have a lot means I have plenty more I can get. I'm still looking for more. I have a lot, but there's still more to do. Saying I have everything means I'm satisfied. Everything I need, I have. I'm very content. And the hashkafah we're supposed to have always is actually cool. Hashem gives me everything I need. We say every morning, Sha'asali kol tzarki. Hashem gave me all my needs. That's the bracha we make. And that bracha really is supposed to be sort of a catch-all bracha in a certain sense. It's an attitude towards life. That what Hashem gives me in a day is what I need. This is what I need for my day. This is my tachlis in life is I'm able to fulfill based on what I have. Hashem provides. I trust Hashem that gives me what I need. And it doesn't matter what everyone else has, it matters what I have, Yeshli Kol. Also, the Kol Tzarki, I have everything I need. Whereas when you say Yeshli Rav, what you're saying is, I have a lot, but there's still more I can get. You know, I'm not satisfied yet. I can still add more to the bank account. And that doesn't bring the happiness. So now we can understand the Mishnah even better. We quoted this Mishnah, I think, last week. Ezu Asher Sinep Chelko, who is wealthy. He was happy with his lot. We said, if someone's happy that they have, so then what's pushing them forward? I mean, you can flip this over on itself for a second. What drives us? What motivates us? It's the desire for more. So if a person says, okay, I got everything I need. So you could say that person is just sort of like lazy, lethargic, you know, has no drive and no ambition. What's driving them in life? And someone like that, even with what he has, he's just nothing really makes a difference to that person. That person is just sort of apathetic towards life. So how is that person called an usher? Because the person doesn't really have any nachas through his possessions. How can he be happy? So if a person says, I'm happy with my lot, so does that mean he doesn't want anything else? I mean, so then what's driving the person? Where do they find happiness? And how could they be satisfied if they have so little? So now Rav Dessler says the punchline over here. Now we can explain this very, very clearly. It's an amazing thing. Because a person's main drive should be towards ruchnias, towards the spiritual. And as the Rambam explained before, the physical prosperity that we get, the material wealth that we have, is only there as a tool towards serving Hashem. Adam kazehu modo Hashem isbarach al kol prat v'prat, shos lo Hashem isbarach. So being smech v'chelko means that everything I have, I appreciate, and I thank Hashem for, because l'saya will tudaso ruchnis, because it helps me towards my spiritual goals. V'saveya lo'olam, therefore that person is always satisfied. Ki v'chol mida amida Hashem isbarach modet lo, because everything that cursed this person, he uses it as a way to serve Hashem even better. Everything is for the good. Everything Hashem does, Hashem is the source of mercy. So what he's saying here is a very deep point. It's sort of sneaking in there. But he's talking even about bad things that happen to a person. When a person goes through a tough time, a tragedy, a challenging period. So the attitude of Hashem gives me everything I need should be the prevailing attitude. It's very, very hard. But the attitude means that Hashem is putting me through this challenge because this is a way through which I can grow. That's the attitude. No challenge is brought to a person just to put them down or to depress them. It's brought to a person so they can grow from it. Hashem is always trying to lead us to being better people and better servants of Hashem. So if you have the attitude that I'm happy with my lot, everything I have is given to me to serve Hashem, then that also translates into the challenging times of life. When things are more difficult, to appreciate that this is also a platform upon which I'm supposed to grow and serve Hashem better. It's one of the most challenging things a person can do, but it's a yesod of hashkafa that we have, that this is how Hashem runs the world. He gives people both prosperity and challenges, but all towards one goal, which is to become better servants of Hashem. So he's kind of sneaking that idea in here as well, but it's a very important idea. Often people, when they take a challenge and grow from it, become much bigger, better people. Communities grow from challenges. Families grow from challenges. Everyone's able to take that challenge and use it as a growth point. Usually it can put a person far beyond that which they could ever imagine as a person, in terms of their understanding of life, of maturity, of selflessness, whatever you want to add in there as a growth point from a challenge, it's all there. A person sees with his eyes and feels with his heart this goodness. Is happy with his lot. This is what Hashem wants out of me. I mean, the phrase they quoted, "Kolmat Avrahmanu Tava Avin." So that was a phrase said by Rabbi Akiva, who was taught by his Rabbi Nachum Ish Gamzu. Nachum Ish Gamzu was one who coined the phrase "Gamzu Latova." And Nachum Ish Gamzu, his stories are incredible. The suffering that he experienced at the end of his life. The Gemara describes, I don't remember all the details, but you know, he had his limbs amputated, and he was sores, and terrible, terrible suffering. And he sat there, Gamzu Latova, it's all good. Everything's for the good. And Rabbi Akiva learned that lesson from his Rabbi, Nachum Ish Gamzu, and Rabbi Akiva applied the lesson in his life to everything Hashem does is for the good. But there are people out there, again, we've all probably experienced people like this, that have gone through very challenging times, and they've come out from those times not down depressed, but ultimately as better people. And that's because you see that Hashem is sort of guiding you to become better. You have to be put to the challenge sometimes to grow. This week's parsha is the Akedah, Avraham's biggest test. And the purpose, the Ramban says, of any Nisayon is Latovas Hamanuset, so that the person being tested should be able to thrive based on the test. And that's the model we have in the sixth parsha of Avraham Avinu, and that's the model of life. So we should be happy when those challenges come our way. I saw recently the Baal HaTanya says a very fascinating point. He says when somebody is given, let's say, a spiritual challenge, and they're forced to grapple with it, hopefully overcome. So he says that a person should rejoice. You shouldn't be upset that you're having this challenge. Because why? Because being able to make the right decision and not do the wrong thing is a kim of a mitzvah. So what Hashem is doing for you, He's giving you a mitzvah to fulfill. Like for instance, if let's say the challenge of Lashon Hara comes your way, right? You're in a situation where you want to say something and you hold back. So sometimes we hold back, we say, okay, you know, I didn't do wrong. That's not very inspiring. I didn't do anything wrong. But you have to realize not doing wrong is not just not doing wrong. That's actually a positive accomplishment. You've been mekayim several mitzvos in doing that. And it says anybody who holds back from an avera gets schar like doing a proactive mitzvah, is what the Gemara says. You have to see these things as proactive accomplishments that Hashem is putting you in position for growth. Not doing something bad doesn't mean I didn't fail. It means I've actually accomplished and become greater that way. We've increased our own spiritual muscles. We've become stronger as people. We fulfill mitzvos. You have to have that. It's an attitude we're supposed to have towards these challenging mitzvos in this context. But when you do it, it's a positive accomplishment. If someone's given a test of, you know, theft, if someone's in the workplace, and they could have do a deal which is a little less than yashar, and they hold back, so it wasn't just that he didn't steal. It's that he actually now was mekayim in the mitzvah of being yashar, of caring for others, and that actually was a step of spiritual growth. It wasn't just a lack of failure. It's a very important attitude to have. And he finishes, Zeo adam usher be'emes b'mhazah. So a person like this is truly happy, ki magia bo'al schar gadol schar mitzvah, because he reaches the true schar in this world, which is the schar of a mitzvah, is another mitzvah. And as he said before, the true reward and enjoyments, olam haba, in this world, anything that Hashem gives us is just to bring us to the next stage of mitzvos. So that's his take on schar in olam hazeh. I want to begin the next piece here. Pass it the next pages. Here we go. So again, it's amazing. It seems that this entire piece we just learned was all part of the letter that he wrote to his son when he was learning in Taos. It's an amazing letter to receive from your father, this entire piece. Okay, so we're on to page 8. So page 8 is a new section in Mechtam Eliyahu, and this is called Darchei Shemayim. He's going to start analyzing different midos, hanogos of Hashem, how Hashem interacts with our world. And the first point he's going to discuss is the idea of Midas HaRachamim, Hashem's mercy. And, you know, we just came through the Yom Nirayim season not too long ago, believe it or not, but that was a big refrain that we had. We want Hashem to show us Rachmim, show us Rachmanis, show us mercy. Hashem should move from the Kisei Adin, the Kisei Rachmim. We're always asking for mercy. So that's what I was going to start here with, a few very, very sharp questions of how to understand divine mercy. Because we know that Hashem is Emes, and Hashem is just, and He has Midas Hadin, but He also shows us Rachamim. And those two things don't always kind of fit together. A judge in a courtroom is supposed to be acting based on Din. If the judge favors you based on Rachamim, then he's corrupt. You know, and ultimately, the Torah says that you're not allowed to judge based on Rachamim. You can't just favor somebody in a court case because of who they are. There's laws, there's consequences, there's a system, and you have to fit the system. So how do we understand Hashem's Midas HaRachamim in that context? We can get into more in more detail right now. Is we often speak about Zechus Avos. We as Klal Yisrael, we have a special Zechus in Hashem's eyes, because we're children of the Avos and Imahos. And that Zechus stands for us to bring about more Rachamim from Hashem. So if you put it in, he'll talk about it. If you put it into context, it's kind of funny. If you're sitting there in a court of law, and the judge is about to convict you, and you say, hey, you remember my grandfather was your good buddy? And he says, okay, you're off the hook. So that judge is going to be removed from the bench. I mean, that's not just. That's corruption. So how do we say to Hashem, okay, Hashem, really we deserve to be punished, but being the way of Zechus Avos, get us off the hook. It doesn't quite fit the concept of din. It seems a little bit corrupt or dishonest, as it were. So how do we put this in context? That's sort of Dessler's big topic over here. So let's explain. So we often think, being that we are the children of the Avos and Imahos, so we have Yichus. We have protection in Shemayim. Hashem takes care of us. As we say, Hashem's not going to judge us so strictly, because, hey, you know, look who we are. We're Klal Yisrael. We're the children of Hashem's beloved, and He should have rachmanis upon us. As we daven, im kevanim, you know, rachamenu kerachma v'banim. Hashem, You should have rachmanis upon us like a father to a child. We begin Shema Esrei every single day. Elkei Avraham, Elkei Yitzchak, Elkei Yaakov. I mean, it's something that we do often invoke in our tefillos. L'hatos es dinenu l'tzaratov. So we think Hashem is going to then tilt the scales of justice to the good. Because He loves us based on the fact that we are the children of the Avos. We think this is our Yerusha. You know, we deserve this. It's part of who we are. Anki Aruach, because they were such great people. They're the closest people to ever walk the face of the earth to Hashem. They're so close to Hashem that we deserve, because we are their descendants. Hainu ki imnasik echol shiachpos lavenu. So we think we'll do what we want, and Hashem, you know, eventually he'll show us compassion, because look who we are. It's like often you have a kid in a school who is causing all sorts of problems, but you can't throw him out because his father's a big donor or something. You know, we all know those things exist. Like, so it's like that. We'll do whatever we want, but you know, Avraham was our great grandfather, so we'll be okay. We'll just remember what our Avos did. We know we often in the Schus the Akeda, we mentioned all the time. And then Hashem will forgive us. And we do this. Like I said, Rosh Hashanah, Zocher, Habris. And then we speak about Hashem remembering the Akeda. As Akeda Yitzchak, Yaakov, Tiskor, we say. But does it make sense to us? I mean, it seems to be reality in terms of our philos, in terms of Hashem's and Hagos. But how do we swallow this? How does it work exactly? And I was going to pose four questions based on this. This morning, let's first think about it. Aleph, first question. Is it proper that a judge, this is what we mentioned before, should a judge manipulate the din of his friend's child? Mina din amiti l'rachmeyu, from what should be true justice to mercy. V'sa'acher shul hizdaman lo lehivolo etzel huvo shel dayin, and then this other guy who shows up in court with the same exact crime, who didn't have the luck to be born to the dayin's friends, yishpot al dvar oso chet mamash kasher chata ben huvo, he should be judged and punished for the same exact chet that the judge's friend's son did and who wasn't punished for it, kachomer mishpat, based on justice, eifo tzedek yosher. How is that tzedek? How is that yosher? Hashem is yosher. Tzedek yosher hu. So if a judge did this, again, we toss him out of court. We'd say this is a corrupt judge. So how could Hashem do this, and we call this tzedek v'yosher? That's the first question. Second question. If forgetting, is it corrupt or is it right? Is it mutter? It's usser. Halakasa the Torah says l'satim mishpat. You're not allowed to tilt justice. If you're a dayan, you have to go based on din. You can't shochmanas in din. We know that Hashem keviyachol follows mitzvahs as well. We have many chazals to that idea. So Hashem can't go against the pasuk, as it were. The pasuk says you're not allowed as a dayan to at all favor someone in a courtroom. How can Hashem do that? Second question. Third question. V'alkol eila, can Hashem yisbarach makor emes? We know Hashem is the source of truth. Matzusu emes, Hashem's existence is truth. We say chosamonis, his signature is truth. Hashem is emes. Yefsher b'shum panim l'tzarelon davar she'ninu emes el etzel nivra. Only a creation may have something that's not emes about him or her. But Hashem is kulo emes. Shmitzusu v'hester, v'shekri matam, because a nivra, a creation, is somebody who his true insides are concealed. No one knows what I'm thinking or what I'm feeling. And people live with falsehoods. That's who we are. But when it comes to Hashem, there's no like hidden feelings or emotions. Hashem is what he is. He does what he does. And it's kulo emes. Hashem can't hide in that way. So something which is not totally emes, that can't go before Hashem. So then if we ask Hashem to show us Rachmanis because of the Avos, so if Emes dictates not that way, then Hashem can't do it. Hashem only does Emes. So if the din dictates that we're chayiv, is Emes yuchilos barachim? How is Rachamim Emes? Emes and Rachamim don't go together. Mercy means really you deserve X, but because I have compassion, I'm going to do Y to you. And if I'm doing Y, I'm not doing X. I mean, by definition, those two things are opposites. There's a pasuk in Tehillim which sort of highlights that. It says Chesed Emes Nifgashu, that there's some concept of Emes and Chesed meeting, but initially they can't meet. They're really opposites. Chesed means you don't deserve it, I'm doing it for you anyways. Emes means you've earned it. So where do Emes and Chesed fit together exactly? And we say them all in the same breath. Hashem's Yigil Midos, as we say on Yom Kippur and Slichos, we say Hashem is Rav Chesed V'Emes. I mean, in one phrase, Rav Chesed V'Emes. Hashem is Chesed and Emes. So how do they work together? It doesn't make sense. So our third question. And our fourth question. Chazal tell us in the Gemara that there are different levels of Schus Avos. And there's generations in history where the schus of the avos was tamu, was you know, used up, as it were. They no longer existed. The schus was already, we depleted all the schus. But met tali in yinzes. So what does that mean? In brichuk doros min avos al pi asher yarbe mispar doros. Is it just a matter of timing that as time goes on, we deplete that schus? Opi geracher tamachas shom schus avos. Or is there something else that causes the schus avos to be depleted? So what is it? So let's just review the questions for a second. Number one is, in a courtroom, if two people came in and did the same exact crime, same exact type of person, same context, same crime, and the judge lets one off the hook and prosecutes one because the guy left the hook was his friend's son and the other one was a stranger, we would say that judge is corrupt, he's dishonest, he's not yasher, and we'd be very upset. That's number one. So how can Hashem with Sarv Yasher do that? Number two, the Torah says Osatim Mishpat. You have an Isser in the Torah not to show favor in Din. So how can Hashem show favor in Din? That doesn't make sense. Number three is that Hashem is entirely Emes. And if Hashem is entirely Emes, then where does Rachamim even fit in? I mean, if Emes dictates punish, then Rachamim can't say don't. If Emes says don't punish, you don't need Rachamim. So if Hashem is cool Emes, then what exactly, how does Rachamim fit in there? And number four is that we have a concept of Schus Avos being depleted at a certain point. How do we understand that? So these four questions. What's going to happen now is going to sort of take us off on a tangent for a minute. These questions we'll get to probably next week, Mirtz Hashem. But Rav Dessler right now is going to give us a very interesting hashkafa in a much more general way. Nothing to do with this piece at all. He's going to now discuss the idea of when a person has questions like this, how does that fit in terms of hashkafa? Meaning that these are very much, you know, questions that are piercing a very big yisod of Torah, Hashem's rachamim. So when we have questions, how do we view them? And there's a lot of schools of thought out there in terms of questions. You know, some people are very, very hesitant to ask kashas like this because they think it's going to rattle your emunah in some way. How can you ask kasha like this? In some contexts, people ask these questions, and it does rattle their emunah, and it kind of throws them off course because I have all these questions. I can't do mitzvos, and I can't daven, and I have all these questions in my mind. And obviously, there's the middle ground is the correct ground, which is that if you have questions, you have to ask them. We have to know how to process them. And I'll explain more, but bottom line is that we don't have all the answers. And to think we have all the answers would be arrogant, because I'm supposed to understand Hashem. I mean, Hashem is infinite, unlimited, all-knowing, etc. And I'm just this little creature that He made that's here for 120 years and gone. And I expect to understand everything about Hashem. And if I don't, that's it. It's all wrong. It's somewhat of an arrogant statement to make for a person. You know, we have to realize that our brains themselves have limitations. Our brains are extremely powerful, but our brains can only process to a certain degree, and then that's all they can understand. I like to use often the mashal. If you take a calculator and you divide by zero, so the calculator produces the word error. It's not right, it's not wrong, it's just an error. It can't process such an equation. It doesn't work. That equation the brain can't handle it. So there's a lot of things in life where you have questions and the answer will be error. I just can't, my brain just can't comprehend it. I just don't know. It doesn't mean it's wrong, it doesn't mean it's right. It means it's just I don't have the tools to understand it. If you're trying to eat a bowl of soup, you take out a fork, it just doesn't go. It's not because the soup isn't real. Or the fork's not real, it just means I don't have the right tool to eat the soup. So your brain's a tool to understand things to a certain degree, but there's some things my brain just can't do. It's not built for that. So when it comes to understanding the infinite Hashem and Hashem's hanhagos in the world and the infinite Torah, so there's an incredible amount that we can't understand, but often there will be questions, and often in life you can work to answer your questions, and there are many answers out there. But there are always things where you hit a certain point and you have to say, I don't know the answer, but it's not going to shake my emunah, because why do I expect I do need to know all the answers? Why is that an assumption that I will know all the answers? If when you have the understanding of an infinite God, then that just having that assumption doesn't really make sense. The assumption should be I should understand a lot. Now, I should have a reasonable understanding of the way that the world works and Hashem works. But to think I understand every question I have that I can't answer is suddenly going to shake up my whole emunah. It's a ridiculous statement to make, because why should I have the answer? Like, who says I should have all the answers? So that's kind of Rav Dessler explains that. But it's a very important hashkafa to have. So he says, Omnam kein. So somebody who's never learned and doesn't know, if you have these questions, they can really, as the word he uses, it pierces your brain, meaning it really should shake you up. These are big questions. So somebody who is yashar and serving Hashem, so he or she should say to his or herself, lo yadati, I don't know. I don't know the answer. But if I don't know, it doesn't at all impact my emunah. Because should I understand everything? Like, obviously, I'm not made to understand everything. I should recognize emunah that's pure. I should have pure emunah in Hashem. And I should believe in the words of Chazal, which is our Masorah from Sinai. Even that which I don't understand. Because I personally don't have the understanding. You know, if somebody came in the room and presented to me an equation from Einstein, so, and I say, I don't understand that. So it's all false. So people look at me like you're crazy. You know, you just haven't studied physics to the extent of Einstein. And if you did, you'd understand him. So when someone comes in and says a pshat in a pasuk, or says over a halacha, or says over some idea the Gemara says, and we say, it makes no sense to me, that's it, it can't be real. So we say, wait a minute, why do you think there's something wrong with that Gemara? Maybe something's wrong with you. Maybe you're not ready for it yet. And when it comes to the world of science, we're willing to concede that I haven't studied enough to understand. So why don't I concede the same thing when it comes to Torah? And Hashem's ways are so deep and so great. Even Gedolim can't understand them. And so why should I think I can understand everything? Even Moshe Rabbeinu or Shlomo Melech can understand everything. You know, there's no human being that could understand everything. It's impossible. And this is what you should think. That's the proper Ashkafa when you reach something in Torah that you don't understand. That's the right way to approach it. We have to know this is always true. Kashem is the menace, lefinu is a kushya, loneda bear is a dover, and we have a kasha in our own minds, or we don't understand something. We have to know, ki be'od amku machshvos Hashem's work. Hashem's thoughts are very deep, they're profound. Imanu, imam adregas, nivra, what are we? What's a nivra? What's a creature? Even a malach. Even a malach can't understand everything about Hashem. And they're spiritual beings. And you have to understand that these kashas, when we have them, the Yitzhahara is giving us an excuse to shake up our amuna. If we look into our hearts, we understand that these kashas often are coming from the Yitzhahara, because he wants us to be thrown off from Emunah. Manachikenu mina emes, to take us away from the truth. This is the shield we have to always have. Sitzahara's arrows don't come. Betainos, Sukushos, Emispar, all these different kashas and tainas. Harichenu mina emes, ala sheker, take us from emes to sheker, mikadusha, elatuma. So this is just a broader hashkafa on how to view questions that we have. Now he's going to end up giving answers also. We'll get to answers. And answers are important. And a lot of things have answers. But Rav Dessler is just giving us this important foundation that when you ask serious questions about Yiddishkeit, that's, if you have the questions, they're real, you should ask them. And often you can get the answers. But answer or not, a question shouldn't throw you off in any way from your Avodas Hashem and from your Emunah. And again, because who are we to have all the answers? And why should I even expect that? But asking is good. And when it comes to asking questions, I think there's two aspects to it. We shouldn't be out there searching for kashas on Emunah. That's not, you shouldn't be proactively looking out. I want to find some good questions. But when you have a question, and it's real. And you should ask it. You go find someone to ask it to, and then that's 100% right. But one part of it is that if you ask it and there's no answer, that's okay. That's not a problem. That's because there are a lot of things we don't know. And even forgetting Torah in the world, there's a lot of things we don't know. There's a lot of things science doesn't know. There's a lot of things that we can't, like I said, dividing by zero, we can't compute even. There's a lot of things you can't do. Your brain just can't comprehend. But beyond that, so when you have this, if you don't have any questions, no need to search out questions. If you have real questions, then that's important that you've been thinking. It's good to ask them. But just don't be thrown off if there's not a good answer. And maybe you don't have an answer now. You'll get one a year, in 5 years, in 10 years, in 20 years. Who knows? You'll get an answer. Maybe you'll find the right person who has a good approach for you. Maybe you'll read a book. Maybe you'll think about yourself and come to something. But we can't be thrown off by these things. This is one of the big discussions you have out there in the world of chinuch and different in school systems. Really ranging, I guess, across the spectrum of Yiddishkeit in terms of how do you deal with kids who come with questions. Like I said, some schools are very scared of questions. If you ask questions, they tell them, don't ask any questions. That's an approach out there. Some schools, right or wrong, will bring in people who present these types of things. And even though the kids had no questions, suddenly they've been presented with someone, a speaker, who's bringing up questions. And they've never bothered the kid before, and now suddenly they're bothered by a question in Emunah, which they didn't have to have because they never thought of it. So, and then you have places where, like we're saying, they don't give you the questions, but if you ask them, they appreciate the question and they'll work with you to find an answer. And again, I understand where each school is coming from, and it's not up to me to decide what schools do, but you do find this issue in Klal Yisrael, how to approach the idea of a question. So, but Rav Dessler was teaching us in our own minds, the approach is, you have a question, it's real. You have to sense first, is this merely a Tzahara trying to schlep me away from serving Hashem properly, or is it a real question? And number two, if I don't get an answer, how am I going to react to that? Do I say, I'm merely a human being and therefore manu machayenu, and I can't have all the answers? Or do I say that if I can't understand it, I can't do it? And that attitude obviously is the wrong attitude, and that's where Yitzhahara wins, because then he says, you have this little question, and then everything else makes sense to you, but you have this one question, and suddenly, bam, no longer can you do mitzvahs with the proper kavana, and you can't daven anymore, and you're all shaken up because you have this question. So that's the work of Yitzhahara trying to throw you off. The attitude has to be, Hashem is infinite, I'm limited, and therefore I don't know everything. Okay, I think we'll stop there for the week, and we'll continue next week with Hashem. Because then I'll get into the answers, so that'll be fun.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.